Well, I had some philosophical questions from reading the Bhagavatam. When I was reading the pastime with Sringi.
Of what?
The pastime with Sringi, of cursing virtue and marriage. And when he's cursing him, he's very angry and saying kings are like dogs and like that. But I was wondering if he was, because later his father was upset that he'd done that, but that if his father was a Brahmin, he was being brought up by his father. I was wondering where he got that idea from, that the kings are such a heavy idea.
He was influenced by a colleague. And of course, that was on one side, he was influenced by Kali, on the other, it was just the whole background for the speaking of Bhagavatam. So, somehow or another, Sri Prakrit Maharaj was the person to hear Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami was the person to speak it. And Prakrit Maharaj is really faultless, so someone's going to have to make something out of nothing in order to get him into a position where he's going to abandon the kingdom and sit down and just hear the Bhagavatam. So, you know, for those reasons, then, through different agencies, then Sringi was really sort of inspired, forced to behave in a immature way. Even though he was a Brahmin, he was still a child. He was young. So, young, even though someone may be young, real Brahmanism comes by training. It doesn't just come by birth. So if you actually obviously go through the full gamut of being trained as a qualified Brahmin, he was inexperienced, he didn't know what it meant to be forgiven. To be forgiving. Mm. And forgiving is a quality of a Brahman, but to be forgiving you need to learn how to be tolerant. And he was intolerant. He was a child. He was impetuous. And he also didn't have any discrimination. He may have had some knowledge, but he couldn't discriminate. He couldn't understand what his father would, what was actually an offense and what wasn't. Mm-hmm. And he didn't realize that Prakrit Maharaj wasn't a king. He was primarily a Mahatma, a great soul. Mm-hmm. So, therefore it requires training. That's the whole principle of Krishna consciousness and Varnashram, that by training one can actually yatraya lakshana poktam pungso varnadivanjikam, by through proper training one can develop qualities even though they may not be inherently present.
Leading on from that, we were having a discussion with Mother Amila the other night, and the question came up about it's sort of related, because in the Bhagavatam sometimes people are speaking like Hiranyakashipu or Sringi is cursing Parikshit, and the question came up is whether, or also like in the Gita, was, you know, Duryodhana speaks at the beginning of the Gita and like that. And the question came up of whether all of the verses in the scriptures have the same weight, or if some verses are more important or more useful, to if we're chanting. Or,
all the verses are not. All the verses are absolute truth, but some are of more relevance than others. Some may have greater weight than others. Just like in Vrindavan, it's all the spiritual world, but still some places are more important, like Govardhan Hill or place of the residence and so on, and other places are not considered so important because Krishna didn't manifest pastimes there. So, just like there are 18,000 verses in the Bhagavatam, but Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam is the most important verse in terms of defining who Krishna is. Other verses say that Krishna's an incarnation. Some verses may appear that they lend themselves to be translated impersonally, but this verse is most important verse of all if one studies the whole thing in context, in a proper perspective. So yeah, just like in Gita, there's some verses where Arjuna's asking question. The answer is obviously Krishna's words are, in one sense, more important than the question, but the question invokes the answer, so they're related, they're connected. The first chapter sort of sets the scene. There's a little philosophy in it, but it's limited, and Krishna's not even really speaking very much there. So it's important because it's connected. So because Bhagavatam, the essence of the Bhagavatam, you could say, is the 10th canto, and in the 10th canto, the essence is verse chapters 29 to 33. So everything, but they're all connected. So everything's important, everything's absolute truth, but that doesn't mean that just because everything's absolute truth, it's the same. There's dehi, deha, videgi, uram. There's no difference between Krishna's feet and Krishna's face. But still, Acharya say that Krishna's face is more beautiful. They say it's the most beautiful part of this form, even though both are beautiful. So, yeah, there's more weight in certain things, like Chatushloki receives more weight because it's giving essence. Manmanabhava Madhbhakto verses are maybe more important than Karmani Vadikaraste because one is talking about Karma Mishra Bhakti, and the other one's talking about pure devotion.
Do all the verses have the same potency? I mean, if you chant one verse or chant another verse, then...
Potency? What's potency?
Well, in the sense of purification, someone's...
Purification? They're all Krishna's words, and they're all being chanted by so many great devotees, but their meaning is different, so they don't have, in that sense, they're not the same potency. So, why do we say karmani varikaraste? Because it's a progression to get people to come to manmanabhava-bhakto. But for advanced devotees, manmanabhava-bhakto is the real business, and therefore they prefer to chant that, just like daily greeting. We sing about Vainam Kanvantam Arvindadva. We think about Krishna. We don't sing about Vishnu or Nishimadeva or Narayan or so on. Why? Because for us, that's who our focus of meditation is. But In the whole of presenting Krishna consciousness, then there are so many, like second canto dedicated in the beginning to describing Super Soul.
Actually, I remember was making some comments about, because it's described that different names of Krishna have different potency, mm. some are 3 times more, sometimes 1,000. But then she was saying, but what does that mean? That there are, you know, 1,000 times more potent. She was asking the question sort of rhetorically.
Well, that's just like the names, so same with the verses of Gita or Bhagavatam, because there's a fall, there's a result to everything. Every sadhana has a sadhya. So the sadhana of saying Krishna's name, Abhinatman Naminam, you know, on the absolute platform, there's no difference between the name and the person. So when you say Vishnu, that's no different than Vishnu. When you say Narayan, it's no different than Narayan. Say Krishna, no different than Krishna. But the degree of potency that's manifest in those forms of Godhead varies, are different. And particularly the types of devotion and the type of ecstatic love that they are connected with, or that's between them and their devotees, is also different. So therefore, when you associate with them through chanting their names, you get a different result. So that's why it means it's more important. So when you say the name of Rama, and you say the name of Krishna, anyway, it uses the word 1,000, the number 1,000, so we should use that as well. In other words, the benefit of chanting Ram, particularly in relationship to Lord Ramchandra, means that that's the type of bhav, that's the type of bhakti that you get by that chanting, is the bhakti to Lord Ram. But the devotion that comes by chanting Krishna's name is 1,000 times more. It's not imbued with majesty. It's fully spontaneous. Krishna's sweetness is many times more greater than that of Lord Ram's. What to speak of, the relationships are unfettered and full of ecstatic love. So that's why, that's what it means when we say that the benefits of these chanting is greater.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I hear about the glories of Panchatattva Mantra, and that there's no offenses and there's so much benefit from it. And it's crossed my mind a couple of times, maybe, that it would be a nice thing to do something like Japa. I mean, I never did it. That in addition to chanting,
something
else to do that. But what would you say to that? Is that a good idea? Or?
As far as I remember, Prabhupada said it was all right. Oh. But it's a plus. Chanting Panchatattva Mantra is all right.
Okay.
It's all right. Frees one from offenses to the holy name.
Actually, another devotee was asking a question, if you have time, because I think she'd be interested to hear an answer. It was to do with Shikshaguru, the book he wrote about Shikshaguru. And she was saying that she read it a couple of times because her spiritual master passed away already, Tamil Krishna Maharaj. And she was reading in the book about how if your spiritual master is present, how you can take Shiksha. But at least she didn't find, if your spiritual master has passed away, how you take Shiksha. She was wondering if you had some comments on that.
Whether he's present or he's passed away, they're taking Shiksha anyway. Hmm. I mean, she's doing it. But she may not be doing it formally. There may be what sometimes people refer to as Shravana Guru. People who you hear from, Bhagavatam class, senior Vaishnavas. And then there's also a formal Shiksha Guru, someone who you actually formally have a regular, develop but in developing relationship in the way that someone has or had with their Diksha Guru, it's a person who they actually really take shelter of to continue their development in Krishna consciousness.
Is there a particular formula for doing that? Because in the book it talks about how to do that, or the proper etiquette.
Well, the general thing is hearing, and then when actually that type of faith really arises and one sees that my Diksha Guru and Srila Prabhupada are speaking to me through this person, then Paripati, you know, Parikoshti and Seva, like that, but not the Diksha, one need not take Diksha. But the essence of that is there, and that actually helps mature the Diksha process, continue the Diksha process.
Are there anything? Is there anything written down about that? Because the book Shiksha was quite comprehensive on the discussion. But do you know?
Is there anything written about it? I mean, you're reading it. It's all throughout the Bhagavatam. Vidura comes to Maitreya. Comes to Uddhava. Parikshit comes to Shukadeva Goswami. These are all Shiksha relationships, everything in the Bhagavatam. All the questions and answers are all Shiksha relationships. Individuals come and they inquire and respect those, all the sages who are accepting Shukadeva Goswami and greeting Shukadeva Goswami. This is all, you know, Shiksha relationship. They all greeted him, they all gave him a place to stay, they, you know, offered him words, they considered him the person most qualified. So everything that you read practically. And then you see in Chaitanya Charitamrita how devotees relate to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as their Shiksha Guru. Arjuna is approaching Krishna, he's a Shiksha Guru. Ever reading anything about the relationship with the Shiksha Guru? If you're reading about the Shiksha Guru.
Okay, good, thank you. During the meetings, there was some discussion about, at the beginning, Prakash was talking about the current situation in the world, the credit crunch thing. And he was saying that, he was reading from Prabhupada. Prabhupada was talking about how monetary exchange is not good, it should be in gold. But he said that if devotees had money, they should put it into gold. But do you think that's a good idea? I mean, it sounds like it might be dangerous if somebody had a lot of gold somewhere. Or is it a good idea? Or?
That's certainly a risk. And the advantage of banks, or a theoretical advantage of banks, is that they have big vaults and they keep your money safe. And so at least they keep it safe from robbers. They don't keep it safe from this type of financial crisis, but they keep it safe from robbers. It's something that people need to follow and view what the actual events are taking place, and sort of know how to judge when investments become too jeopardized. It's like in the Great Depression, I think most stocks lost 90% of their value. In fact, I just sent that to Prakash earlier, that this was just recently. If a year ago you put $1,000 in AIG stock, which is a bank, then you'd have that $1,000 would be worth $42 now. If you put it into another bank, Lehman, which just went bankrupt, you would have $6 left out of $1,000. And if you put it with Fannie Mae and Freddie, whatever it is, then you'd have $5 left. So that's happening right now. And so happening, it happened to people. A lot of people who it happened to. That's right. So it's a calculated decision, because ultimately nothing's sure in the world. So just like you say, gold may have good value, but under certain price, of gold also loses its value, and of course it will lose its value if someone steals it from you. But it's certainly a more stable form of currency, because it is valuable, whereas paper with numbers printed on it has no intrinsic value. It's really useless. This devotee's wanted me to go over and chat at 7:30. You got your saxophone here? Are you playing saxophone at all?
I haven't played seriously for a while. So I can only play for a few.